good to see all of you this evening. It's good to be back. Now, I got a ton of stuff to share with you tonight. I hope you're ready. Midnight, you kids just fall asleep in the seat there, and you'll be just fine. We'll get you some, I'll have some donuts brought in, okay? All right, first of all, I want to start off with a little perspective, okay? And then I got just a gobs of stuff. Actually, it's not a gob. It's all pretty focused, but some little things I want to show you this evening. All right. We started this series, Preparing Your Kids for Life, okay? So that's the series that we're doing right now, in case you thought you walked into a marriage seminar or a singles group. Tonight, we're talking about preparing your kids for life, and trust me, you'll need this information even if you don't have children. Here's what you need to remember about parenting and about life. Remember, if all of us in this room lived to 70 years old, 52 years of those years, 52 of those years, okay, if we all lived to 70, 52 of those years will be spent as an adult playing by adult rules. Therefore, you must use the childhood and teenage years to prepare them for adult life. That is the purpose of childhood. The purpose of childhood is not to fritter away the time, waste it, let the babies stay babies, because they'll grow up babies, and they won't be prepared to handle life. 52 years minimum of your life is spent as an adult playing by adult rules. That's why it's critical that you are focused those first 18 years, because you don't get them back. Now, I have a few things that I want to read you this evening. I thought they'd be stimulating. I thought they might get our attention a little bit. And I thought they might kind of soften our heart for what I want to tell you this evening. This was written by a 17-year-old girl named Marcy Musgrave. Wake up call, Generation Y. This generation has some questions. I am a member of the upcoming generation, the one after Gen X, that is yet to be given a name. So far, it appears that most people are rallying behind the idea of calling us Generation Next. I believe I know why. The older generations are hoping we will mindlessly assume our place as the next in line. That way, they don't have to explain why my generation has had to experience so much pain and heartache. What heartache, you say? Don't you know you've grown up in a time of great prosperity? Yeah, I know that. Believe me, it's been drilled into our heads since birth. Unfortunately, the pain and hurt I speak of cannot be reconciled with money. You've tried for years to buy us happiness, but it's only temporary. Money isn't the answer, and it's time for people to begin admitting their guilt for failing my generation. I will admit that I wasn't planning to write this. I was going to tuck it away in some corner of my mind and fall victim to the whole next mentality. But after the massacre in Littleton, I realized that as a member of this generation that kills without remorse, I had a duty to challenge all of my elders to explain why they have allowed things to become so bad. Let me tell you this. These questions don't represent only me. My whole generation, this generation that is struggling to grow up and make some sense of this world. We all have questions. We all want explanations. People may label us next generation or generation next, but we are appropriately Generation Y. Why did most of you lie when you made the vow of death till us do us part? Why do you fool yourselves into believing that divorce really is better for the kids in the long run? Why do so many of you divorced parents spend more time with your new boyfriend or girlfriend than with your own children? Why do you ever fall victim to the notion that kids are just as well off being raised by a complete stranger at daycare center than by your own mother or father? Why do you look down on parents, mothers especially, who quit work and stay home to raise their children? Why does the television do most of the talking at family meals? Why is work more important than our own family? Why is money regarded as more important than relationships? Why is quality time generally no longer than a 5 to 10 minute conversation every day? Why do you try to make up for the lack of time you spend with us by giving us more and more material objects that we really don't need? Why does your work in the form of the cell phone, laptop, etc., always come with us on vacations? Why have you neglected to teach us values and morals? Why haven't you lived moral lives that we could model our own after? Why isn't religion one of the important words in our household? Why do you play God when it comes to abortion? Why don't you have enough faith in us to teach us abstinence rather than safe sex? Why do you allow us to watch violent movies but expect us to maintain some type of childhood innocence? Why do you allow us to spend unlimited amounts of time on the internet but are not shocked, but still are shocked about our knowledge of how to build bombs? Why are you so afraid to tell us no when we need to hear it? Why is it so hard for you to realize that school shootings and other violent juvenile behavior result from a lack of your attention and discipline more than anything else? Call us Generation Next if you want to, but I think you'd be surprised at how we fail to fit into your neat little category. These questions should and will be asked of the generations that failed us. You've pursued your own selfish desires for years, but now is the time to reap what you've sown. Some rude awakenings like Littleton Massacre have occurred and probably will continue until you can begin to answer our questions and make the drastic changes to put us, your kids, first. Time is running out, for in just a few short years we'll be grown, and it'll be way too late. You might not think we're worth it, but I can guarantee you that Littleton will look like a drop in the bucket compared to what might occur when a neglected Generation Y comes to power. That ought to provoke our thinking, don't you think? Now, you can say she's some spoiled little mouthy brat, but the fact of the matter is, she's right. The fact of the matter is, nobody I know could have said it better. We need to wake up now, right now, and we need to realize that some serious changes must be made in our lives. I want to read another article to you that I cut out of the paper. You'll understand who it's about in just a moment. He led the Rough Riders charge up San Juan Hill. He urged America to speak softly and carry a big stick. Spearheaded the building of the Panama Canal and packed, according to one biographer, more into one life than any 10 men of average metabolism. Yet as Americans look back on a century that began with Theodore Roosevelt's rise to power and look ahead to the final Father's Day of the 1900s, it should be noted that Theodore Roosevelt's greatest and noblest passion was not for hunting buffalo or busting trust or winning elections. No, Theodore Roosevelt's greatest and noblest passion was for his family. Indeed, if there were ever an award given for Father of the Century, Theodore Roosevelt would have to be considered a leading contender. For T.R. wasn't just a dutiful dad or responsible father. He was the kind of man who thoroughly and completely relished the opportunity to delight and cherish his loved ones. One day Roosevelt was at a White House meeting on Cuban reciprocity, when along came a knock on the door accompanied by a small voice announcing that it was 4 o'clock. "By Jove," T.R. responded, "so it is. Why didn't you call me sooner? One of you boys get my rifle." Apologizing to his visitor, the president excused himself. "We'll finish this talk some other time," he said. "I promised the boys I'd go a-shooting with them at 4 o'clock, and by George, I never keep the boys waiting." Of course, Roosevelt was even more concerned about his children's moral development than their intellectual or athletic advancement. In a letter to Kermit, praising his son's interest in playing football at school, T.R. wrote, "I would rather have a boy of mine stand high in his studies than high in athletics. But I would a great deal rather have him show true manliness of character than show either intellectual or physical prowess." Still, some moral lessons were learned the hard way. One school day, young Quentin shot a spitball in class that missed its target and hit the teacher instead. That night, T.R. took his son to the woodshed. For those young people in the room, that means he got spanked outside behind the barn. The next day, the president made an unannounced visit to school to offer the teacher an apology, complete with a bouquet of flowers. His son said T.R. not only needed to know what he did was wrong, but also needed someone to show him how to make things right. While Roosevelt's devotion to his family animated his personal life, it also shaped his public pronouncements. "The tasks connected with home are the fundamental task of humanity," Roosevelt once observed. "When home ties are loosened, when men and women cease to regard a worthy family life with all its duties fully performed and all its responsibilities lived up to, as the best life worth living, then evil days for the nation are at hand." Such pronouncements echo the sentiments T.R. often expressed in his letters to loved ones. For example, soon after winning the election of 1904, T.R. wrote one of his sons, "It was a great comfort to feel all during the last days when affairs looked doubtful that no matter how things come out, the really important thing was the lovely life I have with mother and with your children. And with you children. And that compared to this home life, everything else was of very small importance from the standpoint of happiness. Similarly, T.R. wrote to his sister, Bamie, that his greatest accomplishment wasn't being a war hero or serving as president or winning the Nobel Peace Prize. Instead, T.R. said his greatest accomplishment was that I've had the happiest home life of any man whom I have ever known. I'll tell you what, you can take Bill Clinton and flush him down the toilet. We need more Theodore Roosevelt fathers in America. That's what we need. And you and I need to commit ourselves to become those kinds of fathers. And quit with our excuses and quit making the excuses and blaming the fact that our parents didn't give us the example we thought we needed. That's just tough. We're the parents now, and we have the chance to make a difference with our kids. But I'm telling you, you got to listen to what I'm telling you. The last 2 weeks and all the other series I've ever done, I'm going to give you a list of them next week. You got to get them, you got to listen to them, and we've got to start making the necessary changes in our lives. Now, I have a number of other things I'm going to share with you this evening, so let me get on with them, okay? First of all, I want to talk to you tonight about what I believe are primarily, next week I'll get into the next one, but tonight I want to talk to you about what I believe are the three fundamental, absolute qualities that you must give to your children in order to prepare them for life. Okay? I want you to imagine with me for a moment that the year is 1835. And all of us live in the year 1835. Now, the fact of the matter is in 1835, if you don't get up out of your bed and get out there in the cold and bring in some wood and keep the fire. We're talking Minnesota now. We're talking January 1, 1835. And you don't get your little behind out of bed at least two or three times in the evening through the night and keep the fires going in your fireplace, someone in the family is going to wake up dead. Frozen. You may laugh, but it's the truth. If you don't get yourself up out of bed and get your rifle and get out there and track some game, kill it, dress it, store it, you're going to starve when the winter comes. If you don't get yourself up out of bed, get out in the field with that pathetic horse and one plow and walk out in the sun digging up the earth, there isn't going to be a welfare station for you to go get your bag of rice, and you are going to starve to death. The fact of the matter is that in 1835, if you did not take responsibility, work hard, and persevere, you died. That's all there is to it. Do you understand that? You died. If you don't know much about history and you think I'm a liar, you better read your history books. If you were cold, you didn't walk over, ooh, I'm kind of cold. Ugh, that took a lot of effort. Now I want you to contrast that to life today. You're cold. Ooh, I'm kind of cold. Turn the little hand. Oh, I want some popcorn. Bing, bing, bing. Man, 4 minutes is such a long stinking time. Mommy, I'm bored. Well, honey, let's see what's on TV. You think a kid got bored in 1835? Son, the wood needs chopped. Sweetheart, help Mom make all this bread from scratch. Sweetheart, bring some wood in for the stove. Sweetheart, walk down the river and bring me some water. Contrast that today to how our children are raised. And the problem is simply this. In 1835, and even up until approximately 1940, almost everyone lived in an agricultural farm society. We call it an agrarian society, but I didn't think some of you know what that meant, so I described it as an agricultural farm society. The system was in place to teach every child how to be responsible, work hard, and persevere. It was called life on the farm. You understand that? Anybody here who grew up on a farm? Anybody? Raise your hand. You don't have to turn the lights up. Just raise your hand. Well, you see, it's a minority. Did you know that the last census, now this census, they're really going nuts about getting everybody. I think I'm going to rebel, by the way, but anyway, that's another matter entirely. But the last census, they did not even count the family farmers. They just simply estimated because there's hardly any left. Okay? Now society's changed. No stop and change. And I'm not anti-technology. I just want you to know that. All right? Today, life in modern times is completely different. Let me explain to you the biggest way it's different. Most kids are expected to do nothing to contribute to the family, and then they are rewarded for it, and it's called allowance. Don't argue with me because it's the truth. I read studies. And the average kid in America, in fact, many, receive $25 a week. That's about the minimum in the surveys they've done. The high end is $50. For doing diddly squat nothing. Mom, give me my food. Mom, where's my clothes? Mom, where's my favorite pair of jeans? How come they're not Royce yet? I can't come right now, Mom. I'm watching TV. That's the kind of society we live in today. In fact, in most homes, the kids run the family, not the parents. And you're being run ragged by some spoiled little brats who think you're their slave. Get me this. Get me that. Ma! Tell him to get out of my face! And it goes on and on and on and on, and it's no wonder most of you are totally exhausted, about ready to resign or ripping your hair out and wondering, what in the world are we going to do? These kids are growing up all around you. They're killing each other. And guess what? You got to wait on their lazy butts in McDonald's when they don't even look you in the eye. They don't even know how to say, how are you? Can I help you? Sure, let me get that. I, without even being trained, could do most people's jobs in any restaurant five times faster. It is so unbelievably pathetic, the level of incompetence in most places of business today. It's ludicrous. It is, I'll tell you what, if we didn't have technology, productivity would be so low that we would not be having a booming economy. Because people do not know how to work. And these kids, they do not know the meaning of the word work. You know what we've taught them? Sports. Yay, Johnny, good job! Well, who claps for you at McDonald's? Huh, dads? Who claps for you when you make the big sale? Who claps for you, moms, after you just injected a needle in the hospital, you're a nurse? Real life, people don't clap for you. Now, I'm not saying kids don't need encouragement, and I've clapped for my kids. My point is, sports is an addiction of entertainment and fun, and that's about all our kids know. They know how to have fun, and they have tons and tons of it. And then they grow up, and guess what? They're not functioning very well. Many of them are not functioning very well at all. And it's time, all right? It's time that you and I have to step back and take charge of our new generation and do something with their lives. Now, I'll give you that we have a big challenge, and I'll tell you what the challenge is, living in the city. I told my daughter today, I was severely agitated. I got to admit to you, I was ready for war. I got to admit, if I didn't know Christ, which I do, praise the Lord, I know the Lord. If I didn't, we might start another American Revolution. My father used to tell me growing up, someday, Mark, the people of America will rise up, it's going to be another revolution. I'm standing there in the valleys today, and I'm working out, and right above my head is Spring Break MTV. And it is the most god-awful, pathetic trash I have ever seen. I wanted to take a weight and smash it right in television, but there was another person standing by him and the glass would have gone on him. I was livid. I was absolutely livid at what we're allowing this country to become. And adults are behind it. They're exploiting the kids. They're standing on a stage with shaving cream on and nothing else, screwing each other. And I wanted blood. You know how many kids every day get to what? Listen to this. Listen to this. The average weekly viewing habits of cable households is 61 hours and 22 minutes a week. 61 hours a week. Well, I tell you what, my father and I, what I do in my time. That's why there's so many broke, lazy, pathetic, good-for-nothing people in America. They don't know how to function. Half that time could be used for an extra job or somebody making money or connected with your family. 61 hours a week. You know how many kids are born and bred on MTV? And MTV is trash. It is trash. And you say, oh, Mark, preacher's been saying instead about Elvis. They said about everybody else. Listen to me. The fact of the matter is the entertainment is highly addictive. And their little minds and the little heart just feeds on it, feeds on it, feeds on it. And you got these half-naked women all the time coming at you at the screen, and you're a young man, and I'm telling you what, it's highly addictive. I just cannot believe how apathetic Americans are. What would it take? What, have you ever asked yourself, just sitting in your home, what would it take to rise up and walk the streets in protest in this country? What would it take? It didn't happen after Columbine. Did you know that? Did you know that? No one walked out of the streets of their houses, marched down to the school, and said, it's gonna stop. Nobody. It was Romania or Yugoslavia or Bulgaria. I forget which one, but it was one of them. There was a judge who decided to let off this child molester murderer guy who supposedly that some legal loophole, they let him off and he killed like 20 kids. 100,000 people came out of their homes in the street the next day and absolutely demanded the judge's head on a platter for his pathetic incompetence. Folks, I'm telling you, you ever hear the story of the frog and the kettle? You take a frog and you put him in cold water, you put it on the stove, and you heat it up, and you know what? The stinking frog will not jump out of it. You'll boil him alive! And that's what's happening to us. And you better believe I let my emotions go. Sometimes I tell you what, I could pick the television up and smash it against the wall. Because I realize I can't do it to people. But someday, there is a judgment day coming, and I want you to know something. Heads are going to roll, and God will take great delight in hacking them off. I cannot believe what's going on all around us all the time. Now, moms and dads, I hope I got your attention. Okay, I really hope I got your attention, because I'm not some raving lunatic. I live in the world you live in. I deal with brokenness 14 years worth of full time dealing with people's foolish decisions and brokenness and some of the things that happened to them they had no control over because of other people's stupid decisions. And listen to me good. We, you and me, I cannot change the world, but we can change our family. And we can reach out and we can grab our children in love and we can make them something more than they are today. But we must first become something more. And that's what I was talking about last week. Now, when you live in the city, as I was saying earlier, if I did not know the Lord, I'd leave the city. I wouldn't live here. I'm here because human beings are here. And God cares about human beings. So I care about human beings. But if I had my druthers, I'd be fairly far away from a significant bunch of human beings with my own family. So, we must create new systems to teach our kids or they will fail. Okay, we have to create new systems. We must be very proactive and creative when we are raising our children in these modern cities to teach our children responsibility, hard work, and perseverance. Children today and many adults are simply living to be entertained. They would rather spend hours doing nothing in front of the television, computer, playing games and sports than accomplishing something productive with their lives. Entertainment can be extremely addictive and will make it very hard for your kid to overcome laziness and ever succeed in life. Did you know that over half of Americans, approximately half, are considered obese? Did you know that it's going to shorten their life and kill them, because the number one killer in America is heart disease? Do you know what one of the number one causes, contributing factors to our sedate and sedentary, lackadaisical, I like to call it, lazy lifestyle is? Television. They've proven it. I'm not making it up. Television. You know what we do? We sit in front of TV. And we eat, and we eat, and we eat. And we do nothing. And our brain rots out. I know people who think Peter Jennings really tells them the truth. Don't you understand that the journalists only let you see the window of the world they want you to see? They pick it. They choose. Hey, if we put this together with this story with this, it will give it this slant, and it will lead people to believe this truth. I don't trust them as far as I could spit. I hope you have the ability to discern what's really going on sometimes when you're watching the news and take it in and grasp. I was just so mind blown when they called John McCain and George Bush having a bitter rivalry. Excuse me? Excuse me? I heard the things they said to each other. They were not bitter at all. Some of the things James Carville said was bitter and rancorous and poison. But the media deliberately played it up. They play with your mind. Be very, very careful what you take in. Please be very careful. Hardship. Listen to this carefully. The most important lessons in life I never learned in school. And the same thing is true with you. The most important lessons. Education is important. You got to learn to read, to write, to do arithmetic. You're going to have to learn some computer skills. But let me tell you something right now. Education, the most important lessons I learned in life were not in school, and neither were they for you. If you didn't learn responsibility, perseverance, and hard work, I'll tell you what, you don't really learn that in school. You learn it to a degree. But the biggest lessons of life, you're going to learn outside those walls. Hardship is essential for the full development of character. Children who are never forced to face certain daily rigors of life, never forced to sacrifice, or forced to stick with hard things, are doomed by their parents to failure and frustration in life. Luke 16:10 says this. This is in the Bible. The Bible tells us that faithfulness, or being responsible with small things, will result in being faithful or responsible with big things. That's the principle. I used to tell my children, if you squash your ants, you'll kill your giants. It's just that simple. You don't need to be afraid of your giants as long as you killed your ants. But if you aren't faithful with your ants, the giants will kill you. Because faithfulness in a little thing is a big deal to God. Now, this is what it goes on to say. But if we are unrighteous or unfaithful with little things, we will be unrighteous or irresponsible in big things. That's why, in fact, the Bible teaches this truth. If a man, this is talking about pastors, if a man does not know how to manage his own family and his children do not obey him with proper respect, how will he manage the household of God? See, I never went to management school. I learned to manage my family because it was a little thing compared to the church, but it's a big deal to God. And if you're faithful in that area, let me tell you something. You'd be faithful in every other thing. That's why when people say, well, what does it matter what the president did? Well, it matters a whole heck of a lot. Because if the woman he lives with, and she knows it too, by the way, can't trust him to keep his pants on, how can you trust that he really cares about your best interest? How stupid are we? Are we lemmings, folks? Are we lemmings yet? We're going to walk off the cliff when people tell us, well, you know, you've got to separate the public life from the private life. What kind of crap is that? So I suppose Jeffrey Dahmer should babysit your children. Maybe he could start a good daycare program. Proverbs 12:11. Hard work brings prosperity. Only a fool idles away his time. Now, I want you to know something very clearly before I say this. I'm not against TV. I'm not against the radio. I'm not against a telephone. I'm not against a computer. But let me tell you what much of our children are doing. They're idling away their time, and you're letting them. There's a time for TV, time for a little entertainment, time for the computer. But if your children aren't being taught by you and held accountable to work hard, and I'll get to this in a minute, then they are idling away their time at the tune of almost 61 hours a day. In fact, the average person in America watches approximately 4 to 5 hours a day per person of TV. 4 times 7 is 28. 5 times 7 is 35 hours a week. Proverbs 28:19 says, hard work brings prosperity, playing around brings poverty. Well, there we go again. Let them play. Let them play. Let them play. Now, that's what adults do. Do you realize, folks, do you realize that today in America, playthings, whether it's kayaking, biking, skating, pool, fishing, it is a multi-billion dollar industry. Not that I'm against any one of those things in its proper perspective. The fact of the matter is, we make a living playing around. Proverbs says the hand of the diligent will succeed. The Bible tells us, don't give up, for in due time you'll reap a reward if you don't quit. We are raising, and many people today, I want to tell you something, we're raising quitters. And one of the biggest indicators of that is a 50% divorce rate. It's called quitting. It's called giving up. It's called when the going gets tough, the tough get going. They leave. We have already set the example to our kids that you just quit. You know, if something really gets too tough and it makes you a little uncomfortable, don't sacrifice, don't change, don't adjust. Just go into a new area so you feel comfortable again. And that's what we're showing them. And that's what we're letting them do. The Bible tells us clearly, the lazy person, the irresponsible person, and the quitter will all come to ruin. All of them. Now, I know every one of us in this room, we do not want to ruin our children. So here's what you're going to have to do. All right? Here's how to instill and teach responsibility, hard work, and perseverance. Number one, start young with small chores and responsibilities around the house. I'm going to give you a list of them. Folding clothes, helping to clean the house, keeping bedrooms fairly clean, making your bed, yard work, shoveling snow, mowing the lawn, cleaning cars, etc. I can make a long list of them, but let me tell you this. In our family, by the time you were 3 years old, you were sitting on a floor helping to fold clothes. 3 years old. Now, we did it in a way a three-year-old could understand it. I didn't demand perfection, neither did my wife. If the towel wasn't exactly folded just right, it didn't matter. The point was their effort. They sat there and they gave us the best they could do. And you know what else? I didn't refold them. I thought that would be degrading. They had just given their best effort. Who cares if the towel is folded perfectly anyway? The point was they were there contributing to the family. You know why so many children do not have self-esteem? Self-esteem comes from making a positive contribution to the lives of others. And when you allow that children to see that they made a viable contribution to the family, they feel good about themselves. Lazy people never feel good about themselves. They're always struggling with therapy. They're always struggling to somehow gain some self-esteem from some mystical place. I'll tell you where it can come from. Primarily, from becoming a contributor. It's called taking pride in your work. It's called accomplishing something meaningful. with your life. When my children were small, we moved to Minnesota. Of course, we lived in Iowa. We have snow there too. We moved to Minnesota almost 13 years and 3 months ago. So my oldest was 7, and then 6, and on down the line. And Michael wasn't born yet. We're moving from the house we're in now, but the house that I'm in now that I've rented has a driveway that will hold 8 cars, approximately. Got to get them in there pretty tight. When it snows, and it does snow in Minnesota, I'd be the first one to admit it's not fun. So Dad went out and bought shovels. No snow plow. No. No snow blower. Shovels. Big one for me, smaller ones for the kids, and I cut the handles just down where they could manage them. And then Dad got his butt out of bed and rallied the kids and went out and set the example. And I divided the driveway into small sections and the biggest one for me. And I worked twice to four times as hard as the rest of them. Usually I was done with all my section before they were done. Then I went back and helped them. When the smaller ones came out and they first began to learn, I didn't give them a section. What I would do is I would use the snow plow method unless the snow was really, really wet. Then you can't. So the snow plow is when you take a shovel and you push really hard and the snow goes flying. But you always leave a little trail. It was their job to clean up the little trail. Pretty easy, pretty manageable, and I built them on success. I'm not an idiot. I wouldn't send them out there into the cold all by themselves. Say, shovel it. You know another problem, Dad? Can I tell you another problem our kids have today that you didn't have in an agrarian society, which is an agriculture farm? Is your son's got to see you work and work hard. They don't get to see us do anything. They don't rarely get to see us do anything but play. And one of the things our sons need, and our daughters, is to see Dad working hard. So you're going to have to, that's one of the reasons why I work out of my home. That's one of the reasons, in fact, why all the pastors, all of us, there's really two or three reasons. First reason is to keep overhead very low at the church and make very good use of every dollar that you give us. I don't have a big fancy office. She came to my house, you know what it is? A Formica countertop with a 2x4 under it. That's been my desk for 13 and a half years. I have no door by my office. The bathroom's right beside it. And that's my desk. And there's a computer there and there's a phone there. When I need to get away, I leave and I pray. That's the first reason. Second reason I want all my children to see me work. And the third reason is to stay close to our families. Stay close to our wives. Very easy in ministry to drift from your family. I used other things like the lawn being mowed. Some of you have heard my story before, but some of you have not. When my son was about, you know, I started mowing lawn when I was about 8 or 9. In fact, I started working for Peterson's General Store in Sunbury, Iowa, when I was 10 years old. To be frank with you, I think child labor laws are pathetic. I think they're pathetic in this country. I think that we've changed the face of America by not allowing many young children to be able to work. If I could have, at 13, my children were all emotionally mature enough, I would have sent them to all America to get jobs, but you can't even work there till you're 16. Every one of them could have handled the customer and would have been better than many of the people they had working there. In fact, we used to go in American Eagle all the time, and the lady was just asking, when are your kids going to be old enough to work here? My daughter eventually got a job there as soon as she turned 16. You know what I first started doing my first job? In the old days, kids, we had pop bottles, glass bottles, and they came in big wooden cartons, wooden cases. And my job is to go back to Pete's store and sort the bottles, put the Pepsi bottles together, the Orange Crush bottles together, the Fanta root beer pops together, and the Coke bottles together. That was Mark's job. And then I went into Pete's General Store, and it was a little bit like Little House on the Prairie kind of store. It was the gas station, the butcher shop, the post office. You could buy nails. I bought my first denim jacket from Pete's General Store. My first DZ BB gun I bought from Pete's General Store. My job was to do his bottles, mow his lawn, and then he had this old wooden floor in there, kind of like this, but it was dark and icky. They used to have this stuff that looked like red sawdust. You sprinkled it down on the floor, and it has this oil in it, and it collects the dust. And Mark's job was sweep his store. I want to tell you something. I took a lot of pride in cleaning Pete's store, and then I emptied the trash. And the first money I ever got, he paid me cash. I bought my mom a vase for Mother's Day. She still has it. My kids were working before they were even 10. And one of the things that I did was we had a friend. When I was looking through the paper, I was scouring the paper for something to do at home because that way the government can't touch me. I get so tired of their pathetic nose in our business. So I found a friend who was doing paper art. And she pushed this paper that you'd get it. It was stinky and you'd push it into this little wax thing and become a flower. And my kids got paid 25 apiece to do them, 25 cents each, if they were good. Some of them weren't good. They didn't pass inspection. They got thrown away. As soon as my kids get a paper out, my son was 11, my daughter was 12. 500 papers every Wednesday. Now, I went with them in the van. I helped them lift them into the van, and they walked that route, and I just followed behind in the van, guarding them, because I don't trust anybody in the city. 500. It was 40 below. He still did it. And I did everything in my power to make them succeed. I helped them bring them in the morning. And then their younger brother and sister, when they got old enough, they become subcontractors. And their job each morning, Celeste and Jeremy, they kind of graduated. Jessica and Micah's job was to fold the paper, put a rubber band around it, which is, by the way, takes a lot of perseverance because you got to sit your little bottom on the floor. Your back starts killing you. There's 250 in each pile. And then slip them in plastic bags. Well, it worked perfect. I came up with this little system, the fireplace. I have an old fireplace, and it has those old brass things, you know, that stand up. So I hooked a little plastic bag and just drop it in, rip it off. It was beautiful. Dad, oh, my back hurts. Tough. Here, let me rub it for you. Come over and rub it. Can I stop? No. But, Dad, I'm only 6. I don't care. And then some days, my kids were sick. And Dad would get down on his knees, and my back would kill me, and I'd do all 500 of them for him. And then help him get in the van, load the van, went and helped open each of them a checking account, help them learn, or savings account, help them learn to save their money, and they bought things with their money. We did that as a family for 8 years. 2 Wednesdays ago was the last time. And I really hate to see it go. But we got to move to a new neighborhood, and I hope to find another one for my youngest son. Because the last 3 years, I don't care what the government says. I really don't. He started doing it when he was about 8 years old. Because Jeremy and Celeste moved on to other things. And so he and Jesse will get out there and do that route. You have got to be creative in the city, but there are lots of things that you can do to teach your children to work. They ought to make their beds. Listen, I don't demand a spotless room, but I demand you make your bed. You live here, you make your bed. You bring clothes down here to the laundry room, and I'll help wash them. I set the pace in my family. I consider it my God-given responsibility to set the pace to be the hardest worker in the family. Now, I have a very hard-working wife. I just try to outdo her. It's not always easy to do. And there's not a day that goes by, generally speaking, that I'm not up at 5 in the morning and I'm trying to start the day by doing something to contribute to that family because I want that legacy to pass on to my sons and on to my daughters as they go into life. Secondly, of course, I already got into this ahead of myself. Start them working young. Okay? Start them working young. When my son was 15 and my daughter was 16, they started Normandale Community College. They did not take high school courses there. They took all college-level courses. Went and told the counselor, I don't want high school. I want them to take courses that really matter, and that's college courses. They're going to get credit for them, and they'll give them high school credit for the college ones. I didn't want it the other way around. At the same time they were going, they were working the paper route and another job, and think, in fact, my son had 3 jobs at the same time. One was teaching kids karate. Another was working for this trucking company. doing filing and stuff like that, and another was the paper route. And I insisted on it. Absolutely insisted on it. I'll tell you another thing about my family. I never let my kids hang around in the mall. I think the mall is one of the most destructive things you can let your kid do. Now, again, do not misunderstand me. My daughter worked there. We've gone there as a family. They go there occasionally with friends. What I'm saying is I never let them hang out with friends. Never. Never. You got time to just hang out. You know, today, and some of you remember high school, man, you're cruising Main Street 3 hours this night, 3 hours the next night, 3 hours the next night. Listen, who made you, this young kid, Lord General of your life? When did we decide it was a kid's right to have a car, go where they want, when they want, and hang out and do nothing but, frankly, get in trouble? And the fact of the matter is, parents, we need to take charge. We need to exercise our God-given authority and run the show. And I can tell you right now, with my children, you know, occasionally my daughter will do something with other teens. But no way. No way is it 3 or 4 nights a week. No way, and it never will be. Never. Not that there aren't nice people to hang out with. There are. She's got other things to do. Work and be with her family. And that is very, very, very important. Very important. Now, of course, you want to make sure you give them a good family to hang out with. It's one of the reasons a lot of kids don't want to hang out at home. But I'll tell you what. If home wasn't great, they'd be working. But I'm not about to let them idle their time away. No way. By the time my children were 13, basically, I had them paying for their own things. And I'm going to explain that to you in just a moment. All right. The last thing I want to talk to you about real quickly is the use of sports. Okay? You know what? I'm out of time. I hate this clock. I really do. Let me just end by telling you this. Generally speaking, as my kids started, I started to have my kids pay their way around 12 and 13. But here's how I did it. I'd split the cost with them on what they wanted. Now, I paid for their food. Don't take me wrong. I paid for their food, their doctor's stuff, stuff like that. I mean, their clothes, their little... You want Doc Martens? You want Doc Martens? Well, for right now, you're not going to get Doc Martens because $120 and I'm not paying $60. See? So we first started out. They wanted jeans? No problem. They're $40? No problem. Here's my $20. You pay the other $20. The goal is to make them succeed. The goal is to teach them responsibility. The goal is to teach them to persevere. I didn't get to talk about perseverance as much, but karate's what taught my kids perseverance. You want to get some of my other tapes, I go into it at length, why I chose karate over any other sport. Can I got to tell you really quick why? Okay? I really do. Just stone me later, okay? First of all, it was a lot of hard work. Number two, it had measurable goals to work towards. Number three, it was more than just fun. It demanded perseverance and repetitive practice. That's why I had them do it. I played all the other sports, track, football, basketball, baseball. Frankly, I got nothing to show for it. So, I'm not against them. You have to choose as a parent. You're Lord sovereign over your family. You decide what's best for your kids, but that's why I did that. Okay? As soon as they get old enough, though, when they were around 15 or 16, they paid for all the things they wanted. Here's why. It teaches them dignity, self-respect, the value of work, and prepares them for the rest of life. I got to go. I got to close. I don't have to go. You know, sometimes I thought about just hanging out here for another hour. Just answer any questions sometime if you want to. Maybe I'll do that next week. But tonight, we got to pray and we got to go because I'm going to get in trouble. Lord, I want to thank you tonight for your word, and I want to thank you, Lord, for this truth. And Lord, I want to pray for these families. I mean, Lord, my family's practically raised. And I want so bad for the families in this church to really enjoy the families you gave them, the kids you gave them, to love these kids and treasure them, and to teach them, and to stand up to them when they need stood up to, and not be swept away, Lord, with the rest of this culture that is so polluted, it's like a cesspool of sewage. And I just ask you, God, to give these moms and dads the courage. Maybe they're just a dad alone or a mom alone. Fine. With you, that's a majority. And so they can have all the strength they need to stand up and do the right thing. Help them have the courage to do it. In Jesus' name, amen.